Welcome to the What's Your Problem podcast, presented by me, Amy Bull, and I'm joined today by Dave McCready from Switch. Welcome to the pod, Dave.
Very professional, got that perfect, well done.
Thank you. Yeah. First time round.
Yeah, nice and easy, nice and easy.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. So for those people that don't know who you are and who Switch are, why don't you just give us a bit brief introduction about who you are and what Switch is?
Yeah, well, I'm Dave McCready. I own a company called Switch. It's a logistics technology recruitment company. We've been going for about 3 years, and I've got bags of mistakes made, loads of exciting things that I can talk about in terms of where it's all gone and where it's all going and stuff like that. So I'm excited to sort of let you know all about it.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, we're going to get delving into some of those secrets and challenges.
Exciting. Yeah.
But if you want to take us back as far as you want to go, but just really what inspired you to start Switch?
So what inspired, there's two sort of parts to that question, really. I mean, what inspired me to start a business and then what inspired me to start Switch, or sort of I'll take you on both sides, really.
Sure.
So I was about 5 years old, and my mom started a cleaning business, and she had a Fiat Panda, a Hoover, a couple of cleaning products, and then just sort of set off on her way. And I spent most of my sort of younger years either following her around with the Hoover at 5 o'clock in the evening, or Saturday morning, 6 a.m., she had this perfect little gig that was a Wacky Warehouse. So she'd go and clean the pub and the sort of surfaces of that, and I'd just play in the soft play. but most of my time was spent with my grandparents, Nan and Grandad, because she was just grafting every single day. And she took that business from just being her. Most of my family now work within that business, and it's got over 100 staff, and it's a few million pound turnover, and my brother's at the helm of that business, and my mom is, she likes to say she's near on retirement. I don't know how true that's going to be, but she's she's sort of the inspiration behind, you know, having that sort of know-how and confidence of what it would take to start a business. I sort of lived it with my mom. You know, there was times where, and she won't mind me saying this, there was times where she was working so hard that, you know, she'd forget to pick me up from school. One time it happened. It was one time.
Wow. Yeah. One time, David. Yeah. You are not letting that go.
never. And it was funny because I was just sat on the electrical box going, I know she'll turn up. I know she'd, it was about an hour and a half. And she kept, but that was her, you know, it was all work, and it wasn't really for the monetary side of things. It was just that pure determination to make something work. And I've never had a hard financial life or anything like that. I sort of came, I'm the youngest by 9 years.
Okay.
So my, I think my brother's, 44, sister's 48 and 50. So I was the baby of the family. But looking back just prior to when I was born, it was, everyone worked hard. They lived in a council house. And so the pinpoint of when I was there, I saw this massive change in my family, thanks to my mom. And then my dad as well, included as well. He had his own business, and it all sort of built up from there. But it was very much from like a very working class, very sort of humble background. But I never wanted for anything. You know, if I wanted to go to a class, or if I wanted to try kickboxing, and, you know, as you do when you're sort of 7, 8 years old, you're really into something and then you're bored. And I got all those opportunities. What I probably didn't have, and me and my mom have discussed this, is, I didn't always have like a mother there 24/7, but actually, like, I'm so proud of her and what's been done with the family. Like, that's not even a question. But I had a great childhood, and that's really the pinpoint of where I believe I've always wanted to start a business to sort of go along my own little journey with that. And then I I got into college, but not yeah, by the skin of my teeth.
Okay.
I was a cheeky chappy at school. I really was.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know,
surprising.
Having known me for a bit, you can probably guess, yeah, that I'm still there. But I was the class clown, and I just didn't have much time for the study of things. And there were things that I was really interested in. But yeah, I just didn't focus between the ages of, you know, secondary school right the way through. So I failed maths, failed English, I passed science I think I got a C in science. So that wasn't too bad. And then I blagged my way into college. I think I did outdoor education as a qualification, which was really just, you know,
PE,
yeah, literally, but canoeing, going to Ireland and doing walks and, you know, the football team. It was the best time of my life. But that was it. I wasn't really thinking much further ahead at that point. It was just, well, I need to do something and I don't want to start working at full time. Having said that, during that time, I had like four different jobs. I worked in a hotel. I worked at Asda. I worked at Nando's. I worked in a pub. And any hours that anyone could give me, I would, because it was funding my lifestyle to just be, you know, 18 years old and go out drinking all the time. So yeah, that's where I managed to pass the math, the English, outdoor education, and somehow got accepted to university. And I was actually the first person in my core family to go to university. And it's not because I think my brothers and sisters are far smarter than I am, but it just wasn't a thing on their radar to sort of go down the university route. And then I went to university, loved the lifestyle, still didn't like the academic side of things. First year passed, third, got a third in my first year, got a 2-1 in my second year, and thought, do you know what, I need a break. And I went and worked for Enterprise Rent-A-Car for a year, and I learned so much during that time. I mean, if ever anybody wants to learn the ins and outs of sales and relationships and hard work and graft, you should really go and spend a year working at Enterprise. You know, you were up at 6-7 in the morning delivering cars and picking up cars, and then you were back in the office helping clean the vehicles ready to rent out, and then you were doing upselling to customers, which is, you know, the sort of hard end of sales, really. It's almost, you know, if you don't take this, then you're going to get charged £1,000. But for £10 a day, we're going to take that problem away from you. And that's where I really started to learn that I had a knack for sales.
Yeah.
Was that really, you know, when I look back, would I don't agree with those kind of sales now. You know, I get that it is protection, but it is also, you know, it's a different type of sales that I do now. I like to think I deliver solutions to people now, and I can't physically sell something to someone that they don't need or don't want or isn't going to add value. But that is where I really cut my teeth and go, oh, do you know what? I'm actually quite good at talking to people. I'm quite good at building relationships. I'm quite good at people remembering me. And that's, I got a real feel for that. I mean, I won't talk about the two crashes that I had whilst I was there.
Perhaps not. No.
No. One of them might have been the most expensive crash in the UK history, but that wasn't my fault. To this day, yeah. To this day, it's still not my fault. But again, I also met, along that journey, I met some really strong leaders, and I learned everything off them. I was like a little sponge, like, okay, so how did you get here? What were you, you know? And one particular guy, Richard Speed, he was just Enterprise through and through. I mean, even hence the name Speed. And he was like my first sort of, do you know what, if I pick everything that you do, if I watch everything that you do, I'm gonna do all right here. But it was only a 12-month gig.
Yeah.
So then I went back to uni to finish my third year. And as I arrived or was arriving back to Liverpool, they were like, ah, we didn't sign you up to this year. And I was like, right, what does that mean? They were like, well, you'll have to come back the following year. So no, I want to be done with this. Mm. You know, I want it done in this year. So there was consultation, and then essentially what they allowed me to do was to step onto the third year of a slightly different degree.
Okay.
So I was doing business management. Mm-hmm. They were doing business. They offered me business studies. Mm-hmm. They said, you know, by and by, it's very similar, slightly different way of writing and what you're used to. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you want your degree, then mm-hmm. you can sign up to this and it can be done this year.
Which then just kind of makes you think about how much money universities are making by having just a slightly different course title.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And whether one means anything more than the other. Mm-hmm. But
subject for another day.
I was going to say, I've sort of took that one out of my brain and gone, yeah, it was kind of their mess up. I didn't, you know, get any compensation for it or anything. But so I turn up to the first sort of 2 months and I'm taking it more seriously because mm-hmm. I've got a little bit more sort of life experience mm-hmm. working at enterprise and knowing that, well, if I get a degree, then, you know, in enterprise, it was you could climb up the ladder, no mm-hmm. problem. And that was sort of my safe space. I knew that they would kind of have me back if that was the case. So the degree didn't really matter in that sense, but I did want to complete it. I mm-hmm. did want to finish it. So anyway, I get 2 months in and the first assignment is 14,000 words. And I've never written anything over 3 because that was the format of the previous, mm-hmm. The previous modules. And I just thought, I can't do this. Mm. At best, I'll scrape through with a third. And I sat back and thought, well, that's it. I'll go back to enterprise. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll go back to enterprise, take my wounds and move on. And then an advert came up on LinkedIn. It was about 2 a.m. in the morning. And this advert comes up on LinkedIn for a recruitment consultant. Mm-hmm. So I click on it and I've got a mutual connection of someone that works there. And it's this guy called Sam, mm-hmm. who I've known. He's from Telford. I know his sister. Mm-hmm. And so I just messaged him. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, mate, you know, I know Lucy. You've seen me in the gym a couple of times because he also went to Liverpool as well. Mm-hmm. And what's recruitment? How do I... You know, I've got this experience in sales at enterprise. Do you think I could do it? And he got me in for an interview. And I then met Sam and he gave me my first job. Mm-hmm. And just for obviously context, Sam is also now been friend for 10 years, mm-hmm. an investor in my company. Mm-hmm. And we've sort of gone full circle with everything. So, mm-hmm. But that was the first point. He gave me my first job and we worked mm-hmm. really closely together. A company called S3, which is a great grounding for sort of your first year in recruitment. There's okay. sort of, in my mind, there's no better training that you could have had other than there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I worked in the healthcare market for mm-hmm. sort of 2-3 years. Yeah. And then the opportunity came up to go and work for a more boutique company in logistics and supply chain. Mm-hmm. Now, I knew that a guy who currently works at S3 was making a huge success of that particular market, and he was also moving to this boutique company. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, what an opportunity to work sort of directly under that and learn an industry that's clearly extremely niche, totally different to the NHS and everything. And yeah, so that's where I headed and now gained sort of 3 or 4 years of experience in that warehouse management system automation space. And I absolutely loved it mm-hmm. because the people, I think in recruitment, some people can be placed in sort of industries of certain skill sets and the people just don't match up. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's too IT focused, you know, I always picture people who are dead techies mm-hmm. to be, you know, dark room, lights, working away, you know, but we wouldn't have anything in common mm-hmm. because I'm an extroverted, I like going out, I like being social. Mm-hmm. And logistics seemed like a great hybrid between that, because most people originate, I'd probably say some of the best people originate from the warehouse itself, you know, and the journey that people can go on in terms of they could be a picker and packer mm-hmm. and within 2, 3, 4 years, they've gone into testing and then mm-hmm. they've gone into development and then mm-hmm. they've gone up the chain and gone, now you can practice to do project management program. And all of a sudden these guys change their lives. But the personality is more suited to me because they're just not normal people. You know, they're just more kind of, my kind of mm-hmm. personality, let's say.
Yeah. And I think logistics is quite an interesting industry because obviously what happens in logistics, you have to be in the space to understand how a box gets from inbound right the way through to outbound and all the other bits in between. A lot of it obviously is done by automation these days. But regardless of that, it's not like a lot of other roles where you can be virtual.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to be on site. Mm. So that kind of almost to me means that actually you've got different relationship level skills if you're needing to be in the logistics industry, don't you?
Correct. Yeah. And that's especially even at the highest level, mm-hmm. the most successful sort of program project directors and they know the basic questions inside and out. Mm-hmm. And they're the most important things to know whether a project is going to fail or not. Yeah. You know, is the basic questions of, okay, but has anyone checked that pillar is here?
Yeah.
So although on this map it shows that it's not, it's there, I can see it. You can't put this there. Oh, you can't put this there because of that. Yeah. So I've just noticed how sort of handsy I am with this. So I got into WMS automation mm-hmm. and flow. Mm-hmm. It just suited me. I mean, in terms of recruitment, you know, I was one of the sort of top global billers and mm-hmm. I learned so much from James, mm-hmm. who I worked underneath, both the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. But the actual sort of industry knowledge came from him. But I sort of took my own personality and did things how I wanted it, how I thought it could be done. Mm-hmm. Both in practices, but just in general, me and him were very different people. But mm-hmm. in terms of knowledge and network, it was the foundations did come from that. And then the sour part was COVID hits, and I in my head I sort of compartmentalized it as like the worst week of my life. In mm-hmm. not in the sort of this is the worst week of my life. It was just, how much can we swear on here? How much could fucking go wrong in this in this week? COVID hits and I'm told that I'm going to be made redundant. And mm-hmm. at this point, you know, I was earning a significant amount of money mm-hmm. per month. And it's all mostly commission led mm-hmm. with recruitment. But the commission always reflects your performance. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a big paycheck because you're performing well. Mm-hmm. So in my brain, it just didn't make sense that I was the one. Mm-hmm. So I got made redundant along with the top sort of 5% of this company. Found out my wife was pregnant and I found out that my nan had passed all within that week. And I was like, what could possibly go wrong anymore? Mm-hmm. And obviously I just didn't know what to do. I've gone from earning all of this money to being on furlough and not having anything to do. Everyone was in lockdown. I thought mm-hmm. no one's going to hire me. You know, if recruitment is that bad, mm-hmm. because of COVID, who's going to hire me? And I got, again, Sam, we were constantly in conversation at this time anyway. Sam put me in touch with a guy called Chris Seal, mm-hmm. another great mentor, great leader. And he worked at Harvey Nash And luckily, obviously, Harvey Nash is a PLC company. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, they were still hiring at that time. Mm-hmm. And they luckily, the world did still move forward during COVID. But at the time when you're made redundant and you feel everything around you, you mm-hmm. think, God, I'm screwed. And I took a job there. Mm-hmm. And they paid me a fair salary considering mm-hmm. what the sort of climate was.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed to sort of continue and get back on my feet mm-hmm. and not much was impacted. In fact, I probably think I was a little bit better off mm-hmm. in the sense that I had that month or two of this furlough
mm-hmm.
where I could do nothing more than go and play golf. Or mm-hmm. so it was kind of, when you look back at it,
mm.
that was a time I'm never going to get again. So I am kind of grateful for that. And so I was maybe 3 or 4 months in
mm-hmm.
and even though I was doing well, you know, mm-hmm. I was still doing what I was good at.
Yeah.
I just had it in the back of my mind, like, this could all go.
Mm.
You know, you're not safe in a mm. permanent mm-hmm. role. And I could go and do what I did at this, my previous company, and they can turn around and say, thank you very much. You no longer have a job here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that just ate away at me. So I thought, I don't just want to start up a business. I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And coming back a little bit, actually, when Gracie was born, Lauren has got Crohn's disease
mm-hmm.
and she was very sick after the pregnancy, and sort of 2 months after we had Gracie, she was sick from pretty much when Gracie was born,
mm-hmm.
Bedbound.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few months after, she had to have a permanent stoma fitted, which meant she was bedbound for around about 6 months. So, and this is another credit to Chris, credit to Harvey Nash, was they really sort of supported me through mm-hmm. that time, because I had to basically raise Gracie on my own mm-hmm. for 6 months
mm-hmm.
with no parental help either mm-hmm. or no outside help.
We were still in lockdown.
Yeah, we were in lockdown, and the only person that could come into our bubble. God, you get flashbacks when you say bubble, yeah. right? You haven't even thought about that. Was my mom. But mm-hmm. she was also vulnerable. So mm-hmm. it was such a weird time, but we got through it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did get through it, I thought, right, now it's now or never. It's not going to get any worse than what it has done.
Mm-hmm.
So I put together this little business plan and I came up with a couple of names for the business. I think mm-hmm. originally it was something like Logistech Recruitment.
Well, that's quite a mouthful, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
Why you decided against it?
Actually, the reason I quite liked it. but thanks for the feedback. You're right. It was a mouthful, but also there's companies out there that use Logistech,
mm.
but it was too niche.
Yeah.
You know, once you're in that mm-hmm. world, what do you do? Logistics, technology, mm-hmm. recruitment.
And if the world blows up again,
there's no expansion.
Yeah, if the world blows up again and actually there's only a particular type of job available
mm.
or particular industry like construction,
yeah.
for example, because obviously that went mad during the pandemic, that was fine.
We can switch into that.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I like it. We can switch.
We can switch up. but yeah, so I mean, the thought process behind that was switch can loosely link to recruitment. You know, mm-hmm. you switch jobs, you switch it up, you switch careers.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, if I'm completely honest, I had no clue after I got similar feedback from someone saying Logistech Recruitment, come on. And then I was in the car listening to Will Smith,
mm-hmm.
you know, the switch. And I was like, there we go. That it's 5 letters. It's easy to remember. It's loosely based, mm-hmm. and it can go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But that was really what it was. It was mm-hmm. it was Switch could become Switch Consultancy, Switch Advisory. It could become Switch US, mm-hmm. Switch UK, Switch Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But people will remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came up with this business plan, took it to a couple of people, and took it to Sam. And Sam introduced me to his business partner, Liam, who mm-hmm. I sort of knew from afar, but never really sort of sat down and had mm-hmm. beers with or anything. went on the golf course, explained what it was that I wanted to do, which was essentially build the WMS automation logistics market as a starting point better than anyone else, because I think I can do it better and more professionally than anyone else. I think recruitment gets a really bad rap.
In what way?
I think, well, it can ultimately be a sales job, right? It can be hammering the phones, it can be KPIs, it can be, but which means that I like to try and put myself in this category, but when you get, how do I say it? When you get to a certain level of success, then it should become less about the sales and more about the solutions. And I think that people need to get there as quickly as possible. It's not all about hammering the phones and, you know, trying to sell. It's actually about calling someone and saying, hi, it's my first day and I don't know what I'm doing. I'm looking for an opportunity. And that's the type of training that we instill in anybody else that we hire, is the, the transparency and but also, yeah, just
the authenticity.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because I was reflecting on this the other day, you know, not just about where you start, but how you start as well. So how do you start if no one gives you an opportunity? How do you become a professional footballer? You don't just wake up one day and become a professional footballer. Like there is a path to get to be a professional footballer, but you need somebody to give you an opportunity somewhere.
I saw something like that the other day, and it sort of, I couldn't stop thinking about it, because it's absolutely right. Is that, you know, yes, Messi or Ronaldo or whoever, I'm not going to get into rivalries or anything, but they are the best in the world, but somebody had to choose them out of, someone had to give them their opportunity.
Absolutely.
You know,
and I think there's a level of luck involved
hugely,
there.
Yeah, massive.
But there's also a massive amount of hard work, because what people see is when you're successful. People see when you launch a business. People see when you post, I don't know, successful results or whatever. What they're not seeing is, you know, the 20-hour day that you just did, which involved looking after Gracie, which involved supporting your wife, Lauren, and making sure that she was okay, is supporting your parents going through a grieving process. You know, people don't see all of that background level behind the success and kind of getting there.
And failure of it, success and failure of everything as well. And that's, it's so true. And, you know, I find it really fascinating how, like, you have to try and perceive yourself externally on social media. And what I really want to say is, God, sometimes it's a bit shit.
Yeah, sometimes sometimes my day is just hard.
Yeah.
And I don't want to post on social media.
Yes.
But I know that I've got to, because I've got to be consistent.
Sometimes I don't want to make 30 calls a day. And sometimes I do. I love the social aspect, especially when you are more sort of involved in a niche market. You know, you're kind of talking to your friends, you know, the more that you sort of do. But yeah, that's sort of been one of the hardest sort of challenges, is, you know, externally trying to say that we're growing here, we're doing this, we're doing that. And we are, but we've also got a load of crap over here. And yeah, so.
So how does that sit with you in terms of that authenticity piece?
I think that anybody that does give me the opportunity to work with them, the opportunity to do recruitment, or, you know, go for a coffee or have it, they see that side of me. I'm quite transparent. You know, I'm more talking about the sort of social media side of things. I will write about challenges, and I'll write about the bad times. You know, we had a situation probably 6 months ago where there was a lot of people in the WMS space that were available. And I saw so many posts about how good the market was and how strong it was. And actually it was a lie, you know, because I was getting people on the phone saying, Dave, I'm literally I'm a 500-700 pound a day contractor, and I'm going to go and work in a warehouse because I can't get a contract.
Mm.
And I felt compelled to sort of, you know, maybe at the detriment of my own sort of, well, you're meant to be one of the best WMS automation recruiters. How come you can't get people jobs?
Mm.
But it wasn't about that. It was a wider industry issue in that companies weren't upgrading in this certain skill set.
Mm-hmm.
There was too many people available at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously with that, a certain level of people then go permanent, which then lowers the requirement even more for contract.
Mm-hmm.
And it will always come full circle. But, you know, I had to put out that negative post of saying, hold on a minute, let's have a reality check. This particular part of our industry is not okay at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It will be, but let's be realistic. And I think that the people that were sat at home without work appreciated it, because I think, you know, if they're looking externally going, well, it's really busy, but I'm not getting a job. Like, how does that make them feel? You know, so a little bit of honesty sort of went a long way, I think. Yeah.
Mm. I think that there's a level of that right now, and we've talked about it before, but a level of ghosting that people seem to think is acceptable.
Yeah.
And I think it boggles my mind when there's so much technology out there that can help you to respond kindly and with thought and appreciation for people. And yet we're still not seeing that happen across the board.
Yeah.
You know, you see quite regularly people posting about the fact that they've applied for, I don't know, let's say 30 or 50 jobs on LinkedIn and only one of them has replied to them.
Mm.
And the percentages are actually that real, that stark. And I think a lot of people, when you're in employment, you don't really think about that, do you?
No, you don't think about how many people are applying and are now currently not in work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's...
And the way that people, I think, struggle with their mental health when they're not working,
that's always,
I think, a challenge. So I guess really, what point am I trying to make here? How do you make that different for Switch? How do you make that different for candidates who come to you? How do you make that different for clients? Because I'm assuming you don't ghost either candidates or clients. I don't think you do. Yeah,
definitely not clients, because that's the, you know, because that helps the candidates. And the more we can get clients, the more we can get candidates. But I mean, I'm be completely honest, is that what I tend to do is I set out my stall with that candidate because there's no point in, and it's very easily done when you're on a call. I will call you next week. I will give you an update. I will do this. It's very easy to overpromise when you're trying to also impress this person because they might be a client of the future or they might go somewhere. But I set out my stall from day one with anyone that I sort of speak to, and people that have known me for years know that I'm not always going to answer the phone first time, but I will always respond.
Mm-hmm.
And that might not be within the first minute, but I'll always respond and I'll always be doing something in the background. Now, people that obviously have never met or spoken to me before, they're like, okay, we'll see, you know, but that is the way that I work. There's no point in setting too many expectations. I will say, I am going to look at your CV. I'm going to put it where I think, you know, depending on the consultation, I'm going to send your CV here, here, and here. Are you comfortable with that? I'm not going to call you straight away if I don't get a response. But what I will do is that I have a system where I will definitely get back to you within a couple of weeks. When you hear from me sooner, it's because I've got an update from you. You can't complain with that process. And it allows me the time to engage with 20, 30, 40 people at any one time without the expectation that you said you were going to call me at 2 o'clock this afternoon and you never, because I'm always going to fail. I'm always going to fail if I tell someone I'm going to call them at 2 o'clock. So it's setting out your stall and being transparent. But the sort of the other things that we do try to do with candidates that are available, we offer areas to help keep their skills up. Because I think that there is a huge, I think you sort of touched upon it there, a huge mental health issue that I think we feel a bit of a responsibility to check in and make sure that, you know, if anybody is available and isn't doing what they're passionate about or they within their career, they need something. And mm-hmm. it can't always be sending their CV 30, 40, 50 times a mm-hmm. day, whatever it may be, mm-hmm. and hoping or trying to. It can't always be that. They need something else of value mm-hmm. in their life.
Yeah.
Because no one ever teaches you how to get a job. Mm-hmm. No one ever sits there and there's no specific training to mm-hmm. say, this is how you get a job if you are struggling. This mm-hmm. is the amount of times that you need mm-hmm. to post. This is the amount of, mm-hmm. There's no logic to it. It mm-hmm. is right place, right time, right opportunity.
I think it comes back to what we were talking about earlier with that bit of luck and hard work and opportunity, because actually there is luck involved in it.
Mm.
And it, like you say, hugely. Right person, right opportunity, well, right time.
Well, you look at the slight differences. So we've got a role at the moment that we're recruiting for. And I looked at the applications directly from the customer's perspective, and over 120 people have applied.
Mm-hmm.
But they've obviously not found the right person within that pool. So they've given us the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And we spoke to someone who had applied and been rejected.
Mm-hmm.
The client had never seen that CV because it's in and amongst 120 mm-hmm. others. And it just goes to show that actually, we actually said, look, I think you need to look at this person. Mm-hmm. I know they're in your pile over here, but, mm-hmm. and I think that's the difference in value that a recruiter can bring is, mm-hmm. you know, we're not just sifting through CVs. We're building up a picture of this person and sort of separating them from that pile mm-hmm. to try and move them forward. And luckily that guy's now at a sort of first or second stage.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the sort of bits, that's the bits of recruitment that I just love is, you know, we're not just about sticking out a job and chucking a load of CVs at a client. It's a bit more personal than that.
So thinking, we talked about a lot of working in your business here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when we talk about working on your business, how do you try and separate, or is the business such that you need to be in it, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not a micromanager. I think I'm the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully my team would also say the same thing. But I'm also someone that is, I lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see myself as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
It's constantly working on that. But yeah, I do struggle to get that balance mm-hmm. between working in the business and working on the business.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked with some great people. I've got a coach who sort of is constantly reminding me to say, Dave, you know, that's someone else's job. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when are you going to stop doing the day-to-day recruitment mm-hmm. and run the business? Oh, mm-hmm. I can do both. Yeah, you burnt out mm-hmm. last week. So, you know, or the week before or whatever. So, that is, it's a constant challenge and it's a constant battle.
So would you say that's your learning point at the moment, that you're trying to focus on doing that? Or are there other things that you're finding more important to work on right now?
That is probably the key point is mm-hmm. that we're never going to be able to get to where we are if I'm the one that's always, or not, the team are also very hardworking, but mm-hmm. I don't know why, I just always love being immersed in the industry. Mm-hmm. But, you know, am I a recruiter or am I a business owner? And that's the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want a blend of both.
Mm-hmm.
But at the moment, that is my biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. And hiring the right people mm-hmm. is my next big challenge as well. And we've been fortunate enough, like one thing I'm really proud of is the culture at Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody that is within that environment and ecosystem, whether permanently hired or mm-hmm. whether just on the outskirts or you know, Bal, for example, he's our chair. He comes mm-hmm. and governs all of that. We all like each other.
Mm-hmm.
We all get on. We all look forward to catching up or seeing or going for a beer or,
mm-hmm.
and you don't tend to get that in many companies, you know?
So some people would say that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And other people look for the challenge that we can have with ourselves is we hire in our own image. So when we recruit people,
we're looking for people like us.
We're looking for people like us, whether it's same skin, you know, we could talk about it from an ethnicity point of view, from an attractive point of view. People say you look like your dog, right?
You're talking about unconscious bias there.
Absolutely. Yeah. You look for traits that are similar to yourself because I think you alluded to it earlier. You want to get on with people because when you spend that much time with people, when they're coming into your business, you do want to get on with them.
You spend more time with people at work than you do with your family.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get that perfect balance between, you know, one, it's a skill set thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't hire people that don't have the skill set that you need to drive your business forward. But if you don't get on with them, mm-hmm. you know, if you hire someone that is extremely capable of doing their job really, really well, but they're a dick, then it's just not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
How, and this is where we kind of start thinking about advice for people, but how do you work out if somebody is the right fit for your business?
It's a constant challenge. Yeah. What I tend to do is I'm usually the first person to speak to them. And that's not just because of, you know, it's if there's recruitment and when we're hiring, which we are at the minute, I will lead that first initial mm-hmm. stage and approach, and then if I like them,
mm-hmm.
I get everybody's thoughts within the business.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that's so important because I think a lot of people don't realize how much your culture can change from one hire.
One person.
And actually you've got to understand, again, like you were saying, the people are, you're there with people for 40 hours a week or 35 or whatever it is. And actually you want that team to get on to gel and to work together well, because that's where you see results.
Yeah.
Whereas if you bring somebody into the team and they don't gel well with the other people, that's where you start to see some challenges.
It can change everything. And you just hope, because you're never really going to get it 100% right. You know, you will know within the first 2 weeks or a couple of weeks or mm-hmm. maybe a couple of months whether you've made the right decision or
mm-hmm.
not. And that's where I sort of think the interview process is a slightly flawed overall, is that, you know, you can only learn so much before you take the plunge on someone and then we'll see, kind of thing.
There's always an argument for me about whether you need a CV for somebody or whether it's more, I think a CV certainly gives you an impression of somebody for sure. But I think it's more valuable. So I went through a process recently, and all the company asked for was your LinkedIn profile. And that was it. They don't want a CV. They just want your LinkedIn profile. And you just give them the link to your LinkedIn profile, and then they'll go have a look at your LinkedIn profile, which is a CV to all intents and purposes. I mean, but you're also giving more of yourself on LinkedIn, because you're giving, you know, if you're posting, if you're commenting.
You're giving a personal brand of yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you're showcasing all of that. But I think there's also, that's like a high level, if you like. But then underneath that is really what I'm looking for in a business is, and especially a small business, I'm looking to see that you've got resilience.
Mm.
I'm looking to see that you're not going to be worried that we don't have a big training program, because that's not what this business is about. I don't have, you know, a learning passport where you get ticked off for multiple courses that you go to. I don't have a big network of recruiters for you to learn from. I have got people, but actually I don't have a lot of people, but I need to know that you're going to be okay with that, and you're going to come to me with challenges and solutions and ideas about how we can grow this business, not wait for me to give you everything on a plate, because in a small business everybody needs to bring that.
And that is exactly that. From our side, it's, we can't offer certain things, but we can offer certain unique things that you will never get anywhere else.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's so hard to sort of externally show everybody.
Mm.
You know, we sort of have a little laugh in the office. You know, I'll give you an example. A guy, he actually came from Enterprise Rent-A-Car.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a bit of an affinity to where he was at the time. And he sort of came back and said, I've looked at you on Company's House, and and you're a relatively small company, and I'm not going to take that risk, you know? And I thought, fair play, you've got some balls. You know, I would never at the age of that
But the honesty of it, is, and again with because it's the ghosting that is the worst thing. Yeah. But at least
I thought fair play to him. Absolutely. You know, it wasn't a negative. But we all sat around and you know, we jokingly said, well, he's missed out. This is the best place to work. You know, we don't care. You know, but that is the kind of culture that, like, we know that it's actually a really good place to work. And that's not created by me. That's created by everybody that's involved. And it's just natural that we are hard workers when the going gets tough. We all sort of knuckle down and we feel every pinch. I think that's the hardest bit in a startup you know, if Tammy is having a bad day or Tammy is going through something, like we had a HMRC inspection the other week and, you know, and it's a stressful, everybody can feel it. And that's the difference between working in a bigger company and working in, that everybody cares. You know, you're not just a recruitment consultant, you're also, empathetic. You're also having to listen to people's journeys and stories and things like that. So yeah. But I'm very, very, very proud of the company. Good. Very, very proud of the people in the company as well.
Good. So we're going to wrap up for today. Cool. But final piece of advice for any new business owner, what would you say?
Oh, I would say fundamentally, don't get wrapped up in... the biggest mistake I made at the start is getting wrapped up in, you know, my branding and my marketing and, you know, right, I need to get branded hoodies, I need to get a branded jacket. And I've sort of was forgetting to do the sales, you know, because you are, you know, it's you, it's your identity, it's your personality. And yes, it's important that you have brand awareness and things like that. But come in with a plan of where is my first, doesn't matter what the figure is, you know, it depends on how ambitious and egotistical you are. Where's my first 10 grand coming from, or where's my first million coming from? It doesn't really matter. But come in with a plan and try and get as specific as you can to that plan. You know, what customers are you going to go after, and put a figure on it. Be exact and see where you get to 12 months down the line. Don't get wrapped up in starting up a business. Get wrapped up in doing something with that business to make sales.
I like it. Don't get wrapped up.
Don't get wrapped up.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time, Dave.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the What's Your Problem podcast today with Dave McCready from Switch. If you could give the session a like or a follow, Spotify or YouTube, and give me any feedback on what you'd like to see from guests in the future. Got any recommendations for guests? Let us know, and we'll see you on the upside.